Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Shirley Jones.
It's called Do You Get Enough Love? And if you are a lover of great R&B like I am, then you'll know that Shirley was also part of the legendary Grammy-nominated trio, the Jones Girls. I'm thrilled to have her on Street Player Presents today. And before sliding into the interview, here's a touch of grace. When we are younger, the world seems so enchanting and big. Our dreams are as vast as the midnight sky. We imagine all the wonders of the world being right at our fingertips. And our imaginations are as colorful as spring hillsides bursting with variety. Then somewhere along the line, we become jaded about everything because of the trials and tribulations that reveal themselves throughout our lives. But we must never stop dreaming and imagining all we can be, not when this big, beautiful world has so much yet to see. People of the world, I'm your host, GD. Welcome to Street Player Presents on the Touch of Grace. Today's date is May 5th, 2014, and the time is 1:30 p.m. Happy Cinco de Mayo, everyone out there. It is just a fantastic day here in Northern California. In 1979, the Jones Girls went to the top 10 Billboard's R&B, as well as the disco charts with a catchy little number called You Gonna Make Me Love Somebody Else. But Brenda and Valerie were not new to the game because their mother, gospel singer Mary Frazier, had groomed them for lives in the spotlight. By the time they signed with Philadelphia International Records, they were veterans, traveling the world as backup singers for the legendary diva Diana Ross. They were allowed to showcase their extraordinary harmonic talent with the world, singing If I Ever Lose This Heaven, which eventually prompted Diana Ross to tell Gamble and Huff that the ladies were too good to be anybody's backup singers forever. That premonition turned into a string of hits that included Who Can I Run To, I Just Love the Man, Dance Turned Into Romance, and also the Grammy-nominated classic Nights Over Egypt. During a hiatus from the group, Shirley went on to become a successful solo artist, returning to Philadelphia International in 1985. She released her debut album, Always in the Mood, which spawned the hit Do You Get Enough Love? And that's what we just heard. It stayed there for about 3 weeks. In a group or as a solo artist, Shirley Jones is a legend in music, and she joins me today here on Street Player Presents to discuss her phenomenal life in entertainment. Shirley, it is an honor to have you on A Touch of Grace. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing just fine. How are you, GD?
I am doing wonderful. You have got such a sweet voice, Shirley.
Thank you. I'm a little hoarse right now, though, but thank you.
Yeah, I had another artist on yesterday, and he had been performing Southern Blues, so his voice was real bad yesterday. But I just want to say that it is an honor. I have been such a fan of the Jones Girls for quite some time, and Nights Over Egypt just stayed in my cassette, because that's what we were playing back then, cassettes, not CDs.
That's right. And then Nights Over Egypt is one of my favorites and a whole lot of people. And it's played everywhere, all around the world, even to this day. So I'm very, very, very happy about the success of that record and our time with Gamble and Huff.
Yeah, they're just legends. So I know that the intro only scratched the surface of your brilliance, but when you listen to that intro that I did, how close to your heart do all of those accomplishments hit?
Oh, my goodness. There's not a word to describe it. It's the reason why all these years later I am still out there singing, performing, and because music is really not my life. Music is who I am. It's what I am. I breathe music. So, and I breathe knowing and seeing the smiles on people's faces when I'm performing and when they tell me that they listen to the music and that the music, because my message has always been all about love. And I just love spreading that and talking to people with, you know, either via singing or just talking like we're doing now. Music is just everything to me.
Well, you know what? The term you were born for this definitely fits you. And I also want to get this out. Yvette Brown told me that she sends her love and wishes you a great interview today.
Well, thank you. Yvette is a sweetheart, and we're doing nice things together.
She really is a sweetheart. So for the fans who have tuned in today and for those who will listen to the recorded broadcast, can you tell us about the earlier years of life for you growing up in Detroit?
Yeah, well, my mother was the first person that we actually sang back up with. We were known in the Midwest as Mary Frazier Jones and the Jones Sisters. This is when we were, I couldn't have been no more than 8 or 9. So we were very young, singing in churches, running into people like the Clark Sisters or the Winans, because we were all singing in that gospel circuit. And then once we got a little older, Holland Dozier Hollins, who was with Motown, they had started their label, Music Merchant. And they had heard about us and took us in the studio to do several records that were local hits. And then from that point, Curtis Mayfield heard about us, and he wanted us on his label, so we went to Chicago and cut a couple of, enough songs actually for a record, and a couple of them came out as singles, and they were regional hits. And then from there, we, after Curtis Mayfield, McKinley Jackson got a hold of us in Detroit, and Holland Dozier Hollins was moving to California, so we moved to California. They moved us. I went first, and before that, Brendan and Valerie were flying in to do all the recordings, and that's when Diana Ross heard about us, and then the rest goes on from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you, in addition to being R&B legends yourself, you really worked with a lot of R&B legends like Holland Dozier Hollins and Curtis Mayfield. What was it like working with those legendary people? Were you ever intimidated, or were you just always sure-footed and you knew who you were?
No, we definitely weren't sure-footed because we were so young. but we were pretty confident in our talent and what was developing amongst the three of us, because of people like Dick Scott, who we went through his school of kind of like he was doing what they were doing at Motown, actually, and he had been Berry Gordy's assistant. So us, along with the Dramatics, Enchantment, he sent us through that, the rigors of performing on stage, where we would open for people like Gladys Knight and the Four Tops. You know, we were all teenagers, but that's what he did. He would take us in the studio, record us, groom us on how to perform on stage, on television, those types of things. So we were kind of sure of what was happening. But, of course, once we were actually in the presence of guys like Holland, Dozier Holland, we settled down and listened because we learned so much from those guys. Curtis Mayfield, and especially Gamble and Huff, the business, listening to them and doing what they say, how to live and breathe lyrics and make people love it and understand it and feel what you're feeling. That's the difference to me between the old school music and the music of today. It's like these kids are just singing. They're not breathing these lyrics. Well, first of all, they don't have the lyrics. A lot of them don't have the lyrics like we had back in the day. But that, to me, you have to breathe a song. You have to live it and let the song come right through you.
I agree, and that's probably why I have just been a lover ever since the beginning, for as long as I remember, because back in the 80s is when I actually did a lot of concert going, and you mentioned the Dramatics, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, and you know all of these marvelous talents. And then I also had Billy Brown from Ray Goodman and Brown on the show, and just hearing him talking about the entire process as far as the recording studio and then actually getting out there performing. And when you look at any of these award shows, Shirley, when the older artists pop up, the camera scans the audience and you see all of these smiling faces. And I just want to shake some of these producers up to date and just say, can't you see the difference between what you're putting out there now and what was put out, you know, so many decades ago that is still relevant? I remember seeing you guys, Shirley, at the Circle Star Theater in San Carlos. I don't know if you remember that here in Northern California.
Yeah. Well, I think we were with OJs, weren't we? Well, I believe we were with the OJs, yes. Yep.
Yeah, I remember that
because we used to love it. Those theaters in the round, oh, my God, I love those.
Right, and you know what? And I used to always want to try to get the Star Isle so I could see you guys coming down the Star Isle. And I've seen so many talented people there, and it's a more intimate setting, so you really get the feel. And another thing, because I saw the Emotions there as well, the Jones Girls and the Emotions were my favorite trio, you know, and I still play the most definitely. So I just wondered if you remember that. So let's talk about background singing for Miss Ross, Diana Ross. What was that experience like for the three of you, and how long did it last?
It lasted almost 3 years, and it started from the moment McKinley told us that she had been looking for some singers for this world tour she was getting ready to embark on that was starting in London and ending in Las Vegas at Caesar's Palace. But so far she had not been happy with the different singers that had been auditioning for her, and they asked us if we wanted to do so. We were doing pretty good background singing, you know, around town, but we said, yeah, okay, we'll try it. And we did, and from the moment she wasn't actually in the room when we walked in, her road manager was, and the piano player. And then they asked us, did we know Reach Out? I think it was Reach Out and Touch. And we said, oh, yeah, you know, so we started singing that. And as soon as I think we were well into the song. I believe it was Reach Out and Touch. It was one of the Supreme songs or Diana songs. And she came around the room and we were like, we cannot believe that we were actually in front of her. And then she just said a few words and she said, can you guys get some passports? You are fabulous. And we said, yeah. she said, we're going to London, ladies. And I said, okay. And then she welcomed us aboard. And then from there, we always had a very good relationship with her. I think maybe about 6 or 7 months into the tour and working with her, that's when she approached us and said, now, you guys know I change clothes a lot in my show. So during one of my costume changes, I really would like for you to think of a song and, you know, you guys will sing it, you know, and then let people hear you. Let people, you know the beautiful talents and the harmonies that you have. And we were like, what? We couldn't believe it. So we decided on If I Ever Lose This Heaven. And from that point forward, we had that, you know, that 10-minute slot to sing that song. And people loved us then. And when we got a taste of actually being in front and people applauding for us, you know, of course, you know, just studying her every night while we were backgrounding for her taught us a lot about performing. And we learned so much in those almost 3 years with Diana, the same as with the OJs, because, you know, they were the first group to take us out. We studied those cats. We asked questions and talked to them and got and realized and understand that there's a difference between singing and performing and actually making people go right with you in your performance, in your songs.
So I just love the graciousness that you described Diana Ross as being, because there are so many things that have been said about her in the tabloids, and I don't believe tabloids in the least.
No.
And
people through the years, all these years later, people have always said, you know, was she really a diva? Was she really a witch? And I said, absolutely not. I said, in fact, she was the utmost businesswoman. And if she had not been a female, she would have been said to be a tremendous person because she handled her business. As long as you took care of her business, and took care and did what you were supposed to do, she would love you because she was a perfectionist, which she should be. She was the biggest star in the world. And she insisted on the best. And if she had been a man, people would say, oh, a tremendous leader, tremendous person. But because she's a female, they would say, oh, she was a witch and she was this, and she was not. The exact opposite, one of the sweetest I've ever met.
That is wonderful. I've always loved Diana Ross, right there with you and the Emotions and all of the other singers that were out during that time that were taking the world by storm and filling the airwaves with beautiful, beautiful music. So let's talk about, oh, another thing here about a diva. You know what? Wanting perfection for the fans that actually come to see your show, because I remember I saw the late, great Phyllis Hyman at the Circle Star, and Phyllis stopped the show and kind of told off the people that were in back of her because the sound quality wasn't right. And what Phyllis said is that you guys paid good money for this show, and I will ensure that you get your money's worth.
That's exactly right. That's why there's that difference, that huge gap between, you know, an old school performance and these new school. You know, they could care less, you know, whether you are getting your money's worth. You know, all they know is that they're getting crazy amounts of money to just get up there and sing because they don't really perform. Where in old school, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We don't look at what we're getting paid. We look at what you have paid, and I don't care whether it's $2 or, you know, $200. You're going to get a performance out of me. Because just the fact that you took your money and your time to, you know, bring your girlfriend or your wife or your friend to hear me is my reward.
And one thing I can honestly say, Shirley, acts like the Jones Girls and then also Shirley Jones, the Chris Jasper from the Isley Brothers, who I had on last week, and the Billy Browns, and, you know, are some of the most gracious people to say that you have been in the industry for as long as you have. So when you're looking at these people making all of this money, does it ever get to you sometimes, or do you just love what you're doing and, you know, if they're getting it, then good for them? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, it's a new generation. It's a new world. And, you know, I accept that, you know, and, hey, I'm not mad at them. I just wish we were able to get those kind of dollars back in the day because, you know, we give you your money's worth now no matter what the amount is. Boy, can you imagine if we were able to have all the different props and all the things that they have going on, too, in addition to the love of performing and making sure that our audience is right there with us, feeling everything and just loving what we're giving to them.
Mm-hmm. And when you mentioned that you were on tour, and absolutely what you just said, you know, getting the money's worth, because I have to tell you, I saw Charlie Wilson perform live at a show here. It's called the Stone Soul Picnic. I think they're having it this year as well here in Concord Pavilion, Northern California. Gladys is going to be there. But whenever, when Charlie Wilson opened up his mouth, the entire stadium roared. I just have never felt more love than I feel when I see a timeless act like the Jones Girls or Shirley Jones perform. So I just thank you from the bottom of my heart for always bringing it and keeping it real. So let's talk about the variation in the United States when you're performing here versus performing over in London. Did you notice any difference between the crowds over in London versus here in the United States?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. London, they know absolutely everything about old school artists. In fact, I'm headed over there the 1st of July. I have 3 shows over in London on the 2nd, the 3rd, and the 5th of July. And then I'm recording over there for a record label. And they know everything about the artist. They read our histories. They buy. I found out the first Best of the Jones Girls, the early years with the Curtis Mayfield and the Music Merchant stuff, was on a CD over from London that somebody gave me. Every unique packaging of a CD with the Jones Girls has come from over there. And it's amazing because they know our history, and they love that old school music, because even to this day, their music, that's one of the reasons why this company asked me to record. All the instruments are real. They're live instruments, no keyboarding, you know, no synthesized anything. They believe in real instruments to this day over there. So it's a big difference in the audience, because they know absolutely everything. And songs that were hits over here are not necessarily, they go into deep into the album and the CD, and those are hits. Like "This Feeling's Killing Me" was never a big hit over here. It kind of came out, you know, with the stepping scene, so they play it a lot now from the album. But it was a huge hit. I opened that song here in my show in the States. Over there, there's no way I could open. I usually have to close with "This Feeling's Killing Me." You gonna make it up? Somebody else was not that big over there. But "Do You Get Enough Love" nights over Egypt. "When I'm Gone," which is another album cut that Dexter Wondell did, that was huge over there. So their songs, every time we would go over there, we would always be like, "Oh my goodness, we got to learn all these songs that we never do in the States." That's because they get deep into the album, not just the single or the record that's hot on the chart.
So let's talk about Europe over there, because I know there's a lot of people, especially African-Americans, Shirley, that say, "Well, I'm not leaving the United States." So when Diana asked you to get those passports, what was racing through your mind as you were on the plane over there? Was the anticipation fear, or was it just excitement?
A combination of both. And she was looking out for us, too, because she knew we pretty much had not been anywhere outside of the United States. And we were very young still, you know. So she would check on us. A couple of times we would have, like, girls' day where she would take us. We'd just go out just hanging out shopping and stuff. So
it was
nice. Yeah.
That is cool. And so how many times have you been over to Europe?
My goodness. You know, we recorded a record, an album over there, the Jones Girls, and then I recorded a solo album over there. And so I have been over there. Even now, I go a couple of times a year. So I'm going in July, and I'll probably be back over there again in December, because, you know, there's always that demand over there where I can get, you know, performances, and, you know, they bring me over there, so.
Yeah, I know. I remember when I saw Cadillac Records, when the character Muddy Waters wasn't doing too much over here in the States. And when he gets off the plane, there's this red carpet and there's all these fans screaming. And, you know, I have to say that it really is a shame that the U.S. markets don't get in or dive into the entire LP. Because I have to tell you right now, when I bought the Jones Girl CD that had "Nights Over Egypt" in it, you know, I could play it from the first song all the way through to the end and keep playing it over and over. So there was really no filler music in it whatsoever. So I just am so glad that that many people around the world really appreciate all that the classic acts do and continue to still support them. So was it an easy adjustment for you guys to step from the shadows of background singing into the forefront?
After working with somebody like Diana Ross and studying her and watching her, we were pretty ready. But to make sure, Gamble, of course, hired Charlie Atkins and put an entire show together and kind of made Eddie and Walt take us out on their tour to get us used to, you know, big crowds and doing our thing. And it worked so well. They, you know, Eddie and Walt to this day are like brothers to me, because they took us out and taught us so much being out there with them.
Well, one thing I have to say about you, Shirley, I've seen some of your recent pictures. It's true what they say, black don't crack. You are beautiful. Oh, my God, you are such a beautiful woman. And then that voice, I know that you are mesmerizing on stage. Are you going to come here to Northern California anytime soon again?
I'm hoping. 2 years ago, I was there for the Monterey Blues Festival. And from the response of that audience up there, it was fantastic. And, I mean, my band and I, we just rocked. It was fantastic. And I'm hoping so. I'm hoping so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to definitely be looking for you. And because me and Yvette are kind of linked at the hip now, because she, as well as World Media, have been responsible for the Street Player segments here on A Touch of Grace. So I definitely want to catch you again when you do come. So let's talk about Nights Over Egypt. It was nominated for a Grammy. Do you remember the place, the space, and the time where you were when you received the news that you were nominated for a Grammy?
Well, it really was not us that was nominated. It was Incognito's version that was nominated for a Grammy, right? We were not, but it was their version that was nominated. But I was happy because one of the things that, they said was, they got their version strictly from the harmonies and the haunting lyrics of that song mm-hmm. that Dexter Wanzel and Cynthia Biggs put together so beautifully.
Mm-hmm. So, this is another thing about timeless music. So here, Nights Over Egypt was recorded back in the 80s, and you have the group Incognito, which I love Incognito as well, because I believe they're bringing it just like the classics. And I love Mesa Link. I think she is an extraordinary. Her voice is so thick and rich. And what did that feel like? For you, were you happy that it was nominated, and did you feel some type of, like, and I don't want to say resentment, because I don't even think resentment exists in you, to be quite honest with you.
We weren't at all, because actually our version was on the nominating list, and I think somehow got cut when it was out, So not at all, because our version was initial list for it to be nominated back then when we did it as well. But it was a lot of politics and stuff involved at that time. So not at all, because I love their version that they did.
Yeah,
I'm
going to have to track it down.
And I was even happier for Dexter Wanzel and Cynthia Biggs, who wrote the song.
Mm-hmm. See, that's how you know about classics, because people can pick them up. And let's face it, hip-hop was built on a lot of the music, from an era where there were really distinct sounds. Like if you heard the Jones Girls versus the Emotions, you knew the difference between the two, So there was a lot of unique things going on with music back then and there. So let's talk about the concept for the Nights Over Egypt. On the front cover, you girls look beautiful on there. Oh, my God. Who came up with that entire concept for it?
Is that the one with the...
Where it looks like you guys are in... Yeah, you guys are like in Egyptian garb or Middle Eastern garb.
Right. That was Kenny Gamble's concept, because the title track from that, At Peace With Woman, which is one of my favorite songs, was his concept, because it was actually on MFSB's album called Old San Juan as an instrumental. And he took those lyrics and he said, guys, I love these. He said, I love this track. I'm thinking about putting some lyrics to this. And when he played that for us, there won't be peace on earth till man is at peace with woman. I mean, we just loved the song, and that is a huge song over in Europe as well. That's one we always have to do over there. So it's amazing how, the songs, because Gamble and Huffler at that time, they were always writing, socially very conscious songs. And that was the beauty, let's clean up the ghetto, family reunion. That's all Gamble and Huff, and At Peace With Woman. Those are all songs, and they encouraged and taught a lot of the writers like Dexter and Cynthia about writing those kinds of socially conscious songs as been put to beautiful music.
Yeah, and I have to tell you right now, perhaps that's why I love them so much, because when you listen to them, and let's face it, even in today's day, in this era, they're still relevant. I'm pretty sure this is exactly why they just continue to live on and on. So what I would like to do is I would like to play Nights Over Egypt for the fans who have tuned in today and to take a quick music break. Do you mind staying with me until we hear this, and then we'll come back and finish out the interview?
Okay, that'll work.
All right, that'll work. So go ahead and kick back, all right?
Okay.
Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you've tuned in today, which I know you have, A Touch of Grace, it's 40,000 strong and climbing. We are talking to Shirley Jones of the phenomenal Jones Girls, and we're getting ready to hear Nights Over Egypt. So take a listen, enjoy, and then we're going to come back and complete the interview with our special guest for today, Shirley Jones.
When it comes to loving me, he's all right.
Okay, for those of you who have tuned in, I announced that Nights Over Egypt was going to be playing, but I guess things just don't happen by chance. I guess I just love the man, wanted to be played, and that's what you just heard. Shirley, I do apologize. I can't believe that.
No, that's
that
fine. That's fine. That song there is one of my favorites to do on stage, and my girls and I, we still have that, you know, where it's just a fun song. The audience loves it, and because that was another big record for us, and it's a great song too. Because no matter what, ladies love telling their best friend, their sister. You know, I don't care. I love that man, no matter what. So that's
a fun song
to do.
Yeah, that was real fun. I really love the interaction between you ladies during the song where, you know, they're kind of convincing you to try to dump this guy, and you're just like, I don't care what you guys say.
Right.
I just love the man. So, yeah,
right.
I love that song. And so the question that I have for you, and I hope this doesn't get too touchy, we lost Valerie a few years ago. So how did you get through those moments during that time?
Wow. Well, the fact that she had her son, who's a very talented musician and now and writer, and we had to, you know, we knew that we were going to make sure that he was fine. So he, you know, being here and helped us get through it, and just the fact that, you know, our strong belief in God, and we knew that she had gone on to a better place. We were devastated, but of course we all had to get through it for the sake of the younger children, my son and her son and Brenda's two daughters.
Mm-hmm. So her son actually plays instruments. Is he in the industry too?
Oh yeah, he's piano. We all studied piano, and Valerie was very, very accomplished, and he studied. My mom, you know, we all for at least 10 years. And the only one that really did anything with it was Val. Brendan and I kind of just played around even to this day. But Valerie became very, very good at it. Because she was born with perfect pitch. So she, you know, Valerie was, and her son has it too, where they, you know, they hear everything, and everything they hear perfect. They have perfect ears for music.
So is he working behind the scenes, or does he have music out that we can listen to as well to support whatever he's doing?
Music. He and my son, because my son does rapping. He's a rapper, and he went to college of basketball. My son's 6'6", but he and PJ are more like brothers because they're 4 months apart. And they have he's written some songs. And they called to have a little group. That's coming along. They're, you know, they're still putting stuff out, so you'll be hearing them real soon.
And most certainly, you let them know that they are welcome here on this show to get the exposure that they deserve, and the doors are open for them. That is just so fantastic that, you know, the musical legacy just continues to carry on. And this is what I told Billy Brown from Ray Goodman and Brown, you know, and then also to the members from the group High Five who lost their lead singer. The wonderful thing about music and the songs that a group creates, even if someone else is singing them, you know, it's the spirit of the group that continues to propel the legacy, that continues on long after all of us are gone. So I think that's fantastic. So how many studio albums, Shirley, have you recorded as a solo artist?
One, two, three. And my fourth one is almost finished now. One in London, one with Gambling Huff. My 2011 album, Feels Like Heaven, that I did. And all of you, the people can hear the music, buy the music from the VintageJonesGirls.com website or the ShirleyJones.com website. So and then this one here is Perennial, which I'm 4 songs from finishing, so we're working on finishing that now.
Okay, well, I'd like to have you back when that album drops so that we can go ahead and give that album a great launch.
Yeah, I'm taking it over to London, so it definitely will be ready by July 1st. well, before we moved here to go to London.
All right.
So
well, I definitely have to say that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you'll have Yvette get in touch with me?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, so when I get back, and then that way we could come on again and play some things from the new CD. I really like it.
Yeah, you know, it's great that you're still out there making good music. Chris Jasper actually has a single out that's being featured on Soul Tracks, and I believe Soul Tracks actually does feature the legacy from the Jones Girls there as well as Shirley Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Rizik, I love what Chris Rizik is doing for great R&B music. So,
he's a good friend of mine, and he did a terrific review on the Jones Girls Coming Back CD that was just re-released over in London, and it was never released here on Expansion Records. A few months back, it's doing very well over in London again. That's the one where we went over to London, took all the kids, lived over there for 3 months, and recorded that album.
Wow.
So that was
fun. How did the kids like it over there? Did they like London?
Yeah, well, they were four. Three.
Oh,
the
wow.
Boys were like only four, so they don't hardly remember because they're 25 now. But they remember the London buses. Brenda's daughters, of course, remember more because they were older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the question that I have for you, and this is one of the final questions, the pitfalls of the industry, we have seen people like Lisa Left Eye Lopez, the Notorious B.I.G., Tupac, Aaliyah, you know, Whitney and Michael and all of these people that actually couldn't seem to avoid the pitfalls of the industry that's very hungry. So how do you survive, Shirley, in an industry that can be pretty thankless as far as I'm concerned? How do you keep the smile going?
Oh, the smile is, you know, that people, but then I don't even deal with the industry or anything like that. I just try to find the positive in every situation. I don't associate myself with the negative parts or people in the industry. I surround myself with my kids, my family, and, you know, positive people that are talking good. So that's the way I keep focused. I just don't even be around it. Really.
I hear you.
Yeah, because it can't affect me because I have too much love in me for everybody in every situation. So I try to find the good in it.
Well, you know what? Well, we certainly love you, Shirley Jones. This is Block Talk Radio, and you have just been interviewed and had an experience here on A Touch of Grace. So for me, just to kind of humor me a little bit, what show is the best on Block Talk Radio?
Oh, A Touch of Grace, of course.
All right, Shirley, that's what I love. Well, all right. Well, I just want to say it has been an honor, a joy, and a spiritual experience having you here on A Touch of Grace. And we'll get in touch with Yvette so that when that new CD is released that we'll actually have you back on. So there are any final thoughts that you would like to leave your fans today?
Well, I want to leave them with this thought. You know, and I sing this. When I sing this song now, you opened with Do You Get Enough Love? Down further in the song where I'm doing the talking, I tell people, now we're living in a whole different world. So I don't ask the question, do you get enough love? I ask, do you give enough love? Are you sharing your blessings with someone else? Because that's what we have to do. We have to help one another, love one another, and give more love. So that's the thought I want to leave everybody with. Do you give enough love?
All right. Well, definitely a wonderful piece of wisdom right there. And Shirley, thank you so much for coming on A Touch of Grace today. And you have wonderful and safe travels. And we'll be talking to you soon, okay?
Same here, GD. You take care. God bless.
God bless
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, we just had a wonderful experience here on A Touch of Grace, and that's what one of the guests said. Being on A Touch of Grace is not an interview. It is an experience, and most certainly we have had one with the wonderful Shirley Jones of the Jones Girls today. She's got some new music coming out later this year in the summer, and I can't wait to hear it. She is a lovely lady and a beautiful spirit. So now I want to talk about the upcoming shows that are coming. On Thursday the 8th, we will be interviewing the Intruders, and remember their song, I'll Always Love My Mama. I can't wait to have them on this show because Sunday is Mother's Day, so definitely an appropriate time to have those great fellas on. Then on Friday the 9th, Ronald Bell Jr. joins us to discuss his new book, Bigger Than Hip Hop. So I'm looking forward to that as well. And then also on Saturday, we have author and screenwriter Drika Armstrong, who will come to A Touch of Grace to discuss her creative life. Great shows, phenomenal guests. Now here's, I want to give a special shout out to World Media because they definitely have been bringing the guests. They were the ones who made the interview with Danielle Spencer possible, as well as Chris Jasper's interview, and then a couple of months ago, Howard Hewitt. So here's a final that I want to leave you with. And of all we have seen, allow our minds to adjust to realities good and bad, and accepting things as they are, both good and sad, and be about something as opposed to nothing, knowing that we are made in the image of something so vast and divine beyond pure comprehension of our human mind. I want to go ahead and leave you with a song, but before I just want to say this, GD loves you very much. Make sure that you're loving yourself, all right, because you are a very special person in the eyes of the master. So I'm going to go ahead and close the set out today with Chris Jasper's The One. It's being featured as Song of the Month over at Soul Tracks. So take a listen, enjoy, and happy Cinco de Mayo.
Searching every
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.